Sarah Jones is one of the stars of spoken word performance. Her latest one-woman show, Bridge and Tunnel, is set at an open mic poetry slam. She portrays immigrants from Pakistan, Jamaica, Mexico, Jordan, and other countries who have come to the Bridge and Tunnel Cafe in South Queens, New York, for the annual event called I Am a Poet Too. In the New York Times review of the show, Margot Jefferson wrote, "Solo performance frees gifted artists to change sex, race, age, body type, and personality in an instant. It takes great craft and generosity. Sarah Jones has both." Unquote. Jones's fans include Meryl Streep, who is billed as the co-presenter of the show. Last month, Bridge and Tunnel won an Obie, an Off-Broadway Theater Award, for outstanding solo performance. We invited Jones for an interview. I asked her to introduce us to one of the characters from Bridge and Tunnel, so here she is as Gladys, a Jamaican immigrant.
My name is Gladys, and I'm a poet, slash performer, slash playwright, slash spoken word artist, slash actress. But I currently still have my regular job. And there are basically few career possibilities for people of Jamaican ancestry in this country. One is to become Secretary of State. So you have Secretary of State. Another is to take care of children. But you see, either way is the same thing. Because you have to run behind the overprivileged baby who can barely form sentences. And then you see, you must clean up his messes for him while he takes a nap. But I don't like to mix art and politics.
That's great. And Sarah, how did you think of Gladys?
I think Gladys comes from my experience with meeting wonderful poets, you know, writers of various disciplines, other kinds of artists from lots of different backgrounds, including, you know, people from the Caribbean who are such a vibrant part of the cultural community, either here in New York or wherever I've traveled, yet I don't hear their voices, you know, when I turn on my television or I, you know, go to see a movie. The most you can expect is, you know, a stereotype of a Rasta who, you know, isn't recognizable as any human being who we could ever be friends with or want to talk to or anything. It's always, you know, kind of just a caricature for the sake of the movie or, you know, backdrop or something. And I thought, what a waste of, you know, the voices of people who really have often, you know, compelling things to say and unique takes on the world. And, you know, what are those stories of coming over here, wanting to find opportunity maybe as an artist or as a worker and discovering that, you know, it's very difficult to get a job. You know, your educational achievements don't mean the same thing here in this country as they do in your country. And so you do find yourself having to do work that, you know, maybe doesn't pay as well or is, you know, kind of restricts you to a certain field. Who are all of these people with these accents who are doing all this work in this country, often for very little money, you know, or without the kind of, you know, respect for their dignity that should come with that work. So I kind of want to hear them. I want to hear what they have to say.
Now, along with creating these characters, you've created poems for many of them to read, because after all, it is a poetry slam. And some of the poems are pretty funny, unintentionally funny, in the sense that I don't think the characters would necessarily think they're funny.
Right.
Have you written any poems that you intended to do in your own voice that you then realized, man, this really isn't very good, and then you used it in the voice of another character?
I absolutely have done that. I think sometimes those characters, you know, the ones that I've been able to flesh out as fully as I need to have them come to life on stage and, you know, be recognizable people for the audience, those characters are often, you know, the voice I hear in my head as I sit down to write something. So if I'm not careful, I'll be writing from the perspective of, say, there's a character in the show, Lorraine, who's the oldest immigrant in the show. She was really little when she came to this country, and, well, I'll let her tell it. But
hi, how are you, Cherry, honey? How are you? This is Lorraine. Listen, let me tell you what happens, you know, when Sarah Jones, a very nice young girl, you know, a young black girl, she calls herself black. She's really more like a caramel color, if you see her. But anyway, so she writes these poems, you know, and she writes them sometimes thinking like she's another person. And sometimes, you know, you really have to write what you know. And I tell her, you know, listen, try to put yourself in that person's head. But it sounds ridiculous for her to try to read, you know, about me and my experience coming over here. You know, if you came through Ellis Island, I said, you know, let me read that. That's a poem that comes from Lorraine's experience. So to make it complete for the audience, it's better for me to read it. You see what I mean, honey? So that's the idea.
That's really great. Do you want to do a couple of lines of the poem?
Well, you know, my poem has more to do with, you know, I'm not as young as I used to be. And I can't see you, Terry, but don't give me that look. I'm not that old. Okay. Anyway, the point is that as an older person in this society, and I know we don't talk about it, but people don't have the respect. Once you start to get older, you know, there's what you call ageism. They think you're too old, and they just want to make fun. And it's a shame. So I have a parody, a send-up, you see, because the young kids, they think, you know, that once there's a little snow on the roof, as they say, even though mine's strawberry blonde, I don't let it go white. But anyway, the point is that, you know, they think that you're not sharp. You don't, you're not a vibrant person anymore. And I want them to realize that everybody was young once, and when you get older, you know, you still carry all of that experience with you. So here's a little piece of a poem. And for all of the young kids that I see when I travel on the bus. Riding on the bus. No, really, please, don't get up. I don't make a fuss. No, really, please, don't get up. I have the senior's blues. No, really, please, don't get up. I will step on your foot with my orthopedic shoes. And so on. I like to do that one. It's a hit with the kids. And then they can remember one of these days they'll be tying on a pair of their own orthopedic shoes.
My guest is Sarah Jones. Her current one-woman show, Bridge and Tunnel, is set at an open mic poetry slam. She portrays immigrants from around the world who've come to read their work. Jones grew up in New York and Washington in an interracial family. No, you have such an ear for voices. I know that when you were in high school, you went to the UN International School, where I imagine you met students from all over the world. Did that help establish the music of different voices and accents in your mind?
I definitely think my experience at the United Nations School solidified what had begun when I was much younger. I think being in a family and, you know, kind of school environments from a very young age that provided me with a lot of multicultural fodder, for lack of a better way to put it. I mean, I did have this mix of voices, you know, at the Thanksgiving table and at you know, school picnics or whatever that was. There were lots of different accents to kind of savor. And then TV and movies, and I mean, it just all really opened up even more for me. I started hearing the distinctions. I mean, I think I tried out a British accent for a school play in like the fourth grade. I think we did As You Like It or something, and I came out, you know, I came out with this accent, and my teacher sort of looked at me like, where did this working class kid in D.C. get this British accent from, you know? But I guess I just was fascinated and really taken with the sounds of these voices really early, probably the same way other kids get into, you know, video games or playing outside or whatever it is that kids can really get passionate about. For me, it was all these voices. And the UN school, where suddenly I could hear all of these frequencies, you know, all of these new voices, it just, I was overstimulated every day, all day. It was amazing.
Now, I don't know anything about the UN school, except that I would assume that the parents of the children in it worked for the UN, which your parents did not. So what?
Right.
How do you get in? What is it?
Well, there are some kids whose families don't work for the UN. You just sort of find out about the school, as my parents did. I know they were. My parents were really committed to making sure I had a continuing multicultural, you know, educational environment when I got to New York from Washington, D.C. So they, I guess they probably didn't look around and realize that every school in New York is multicultural unless it's private in a way that, you know, some kids can't go. But
was it so important to them to have a multicultural school environment for you because you're from a multicultural family in the sense that your father's side of the family is African-American, your mother's side is, I'm not sure where your mother's from.
Hodgepodge. Hodgepodge. No, she's, my father's side of the family is African-American and of, there's some Caribbean descent way back there. And then on my mother's side of the family, there's a mix. My grandmother was Irish and German, and my grandfather is a mix of stuff that includes, I mean, the roots go to the Caribbean, to Dominican Republic. There's a whole mix of what, you know, kind of creates this funny thing that is me. But yes, I think that they're coming from, you know, this multiracial and multicultural sort of melting pot under one roof meant that they had more of a commitment to making sure when I looked around and talked to the kids around me, it wasn't such a strange thing to come home and see my family because their families looked similar. I mean, it was nothing for us to, you know, kind of sit around in class and, hi, my mom's from Egypt and my father's from Sweden. Oh, well, my dad's Korean and, you know, my mother's from Sri Lanka. I mean, it was just normal.
So when you were at the UN school and hearing students from all around the world with different accents and so on, and you were really excited and started to do their voices, like, what was your stage for that? You weren't performing your one-man show yet, you know, and if you did it to their faces, it would seem like you were making fun of them. So, like, how would you?
It's funny. I'd love to be able to tell you that I would clear the tables in the cafeteria and hop up there and start performing, but it certainly wasn't quite like that. I mean, the excitement that I describe in hearing all of those voices is something that I think I was only partially aware of at the time. I knew that, you know, I was surrounded by all of these wonderful languages, accents, but I also knew that I had to get my butt to math class on time and I had to, you know, get my homework done. So I think that what was happening more than anything was there was this kind of, you know, series of germinating seeds that were planted in my head at the time. And the only times I really got to start to, you know, experiment with my ability to repeat those voices back to people was on a few occasions. I can't believe I didn't get in trouble for this then, and hopefully I won't get in trouble for it now. But I used to get classmates out of different courses if they didn't want to have to go, or some of us would skip the day once in a while, and I would, you know, I would
call up and say, hello, this is Renata's mother. Could you please tell her to meet me down in the car park because she's feeling very ill and she'll have to come home. I'm sorry about that. Could you please send her along home?
And I'd do things like that from the payphone at school. It was terrible.
Wait, were you ever discovered?
We didn't have cell phones. I was not discovered, but hopefully all of my classmates are now safely not living at home and won't suffer any consequences because I'm outing them.
What would you get in return? Would there be a payoff for doing that?
No payoff. Lots of giggles. Uh-huh. Lots of giggles, and we'd go, you know, hang out and terrorize New York City for an afternoon.
Sarah Jones, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry. Take care.
Sarah Jones will perform her one-woman show, Bridge and Tunnel, off-Broadway through August 15th. She hopes to bring the show to Broadway next year.